WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
How much has rent gone up in your neighborhood? Across Chicago, the rents are high, too high for a lot of people. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. A popular rule of thumb says that you should spend no more than 30% of your income on rent, but it's becoming a harder standard to meet for many Chicagoans.
5 to 7 years ago, you can find a two-bedroom for $1,000, you know, definitely a one-bedroom for $700, $800, but now it's just ridiculous.
A new WBEZ analysis finds that rent in Chicago has skyrocketed, even as incomes have remained flat or have risen at a sluggish pace. For more on this, we spoke with WBEZ data reporter Amy Chin and also Daniel K. Hertz, who's housing director with Impact for Equity. That's a nonprofit advocacy and research organization. He's also the former policy director for Chicago's Department of Housing. We began with Amy, though, telling us what the data is saying and some of the main takeaways.
You know, as renters, like something we kind of innately know is the price of rent. And if anyone has rented in the last couple of years, you know that it has gone up by a lot. Mm-hmm. And so what we wanted to do is collect essentially what the median rent was in every single Chicago neighborhood going back almost 100 years and compare that to what incomes were for people and see how many neighborhoods people could actually afford. And I think to me, the most striking thing is that for someone who makes the exact median income in the city, so half of Chicagoans make more, half of Chicagoans make less. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they could afford pretty much, you know, the median rent in every single Chicago neighborhood. And fast forward to 2022, seven neighborhoods are no longer affordable to, you know, your average household.
That's a very stark contrast, right? To come from a time where you could afford to live virtually anywhere across the city.
Yeah.
That, I've been here 4 years. That sounds very foreign to me.
Yeah.
So how high are these rents rising? What are the numbers looking like?
Yeah, so the data we have is a little bit of a lag. So the Census Bureau, they essentially do a survey of rents every year. And what we found is that in 2000, median rent in Chicago, and when I say rent, I mean rent and utilities, that was $1,125. And in 2023, that number is now 1,436. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but that's a 28% increase. And when you compare that to how fast incomes have risen during that same period, incomes have risen just 9%. So rents have risen three times faster than incomes.
Are there neighborhoods or specific pockets of Chicago where they're rising the fastest?
Yeah. So the South Loop comes to mind.
Okay.
In 2000, it was the neighborhood that was 75th most expensive. So literally like two other neighborhoods in Chicago were less expensive than the South Loop. It was the cheapest neighborhood. And
not anymore.
Yeah, it's the third most expensive neighborhood. So rents in the South Loop, if you adjust it to, you know, dollars today, it was $626 in 2000. And now it's $2,400. So that is like quadruple the amount in just 20 years.
Before we bring you in, Daniel, I want Amy for you to walk me through LaTonya Robinson's story. Now, she's the woman whose voice we heard just a few moments ago. She's a mother of three, and it sounds like a struggle. What's going on with her?
Yeah, so she's a single mom. Two of her youngest, her daughters, they live with her. Her son, who's eight, lives out of state, and she's been looking for an apartment for 2 years now.
2 years?
2 years, yes. So she's currently living with her mom in the same like house she grew up in on the Southwest Side. And she wants a 3-bedroom apartment so her 2 daughters, as they get older, can have their own rooms, they can have more space. But it's just, yeah, it's been really hard with her budget. Her income is limited since she's a single mom. Mm-hmm. She needs to pick up and drop off her kids. So she's working a part-time job, in retail. She makes $40,000 a year, more or less.
Yeah.
And her budget for rent is $1,400. Which is already, a little bit above what is recommended to be affordable.
Absolutely.
And she drives around her neighborhood and studios, 1-beds are maybe $1,400, but 3 bedrooms are just completely out of her budget.
And I know you spend some time with her. I mean, she's doing these drive arounds like every week, right? Mm-hmm. Looking for a place to live.
Yeah. I mean, she pretty much has like a mental map of like a 1-mile radius of where she's looking.
And
she knows exactly how much rent has increased at every single apartment.
Well, let's hear from her. She says, looking online, she goes out to physically look for those available apartments. You rode around with her in Ashburn with one of these searches. So let's listen.
I do this, I would say every other day, look around and drive around to look for apartment signs for 2 to 3 bedrooms. And so these apartments over here, they were like $1,000, but now I think they have a new owner. So these are like $1,700 for 1 bedroom.
So, Daniel, you've been listening along here. I mean, does LaTanya's story sound familiar to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've seen, housing has always been an issue in Chicago. It's affordability, quality. But certainly over the last 20 years, as Amy was saying, it has gotten a lot more acute.
Mm. So how many LaTanyas are out there? Because in Chicago, because I mean, hearing her story, I've also been in her shoes, so it's really hard to listen to some of that tape because I've been there with, trying to find for months and months on end a place for my kids and I to live, having to move in with relatives until I could find something that I could afford. Like, LaTanya's story is also my past story, and I know many, many other parents can relate. So talk to us about, the scope here. How many people are going through this?
Yeah, 1,000%. So, there's a lot of different ways to look at that question, but a couple ones that I would lift up, the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University has estimated there's about 120,000, quote unquote, missing affordable units based on the number of people who need low or moderate cost rental homes. Mm-hmm. There's only about 600,000 rental homes in the whole city. So 120,000, I mean, we're talking a very substantial portion.
Wow.
Another way of looking at it is that a majority, I think it's 51%, but it's a majority of Chicago renters are cost burdened. So based on that level that you cited of a 30% of your income,
right,
most renters are not able to fit that into their budget.
That's the common guideline. So who can afford to rent right now, Daniel?
It depends, as Amy was saying, it depends on the neighborhood, mm-hmm, and it depends on the size of the unit, right? I think one thing that you do see is a lot of people doubling up or living in smaller, fewer bedrooms in their homes than they would like to have. But I think it is true that in most of the city still, if you, have two middle class incomes together, generally you can find something. But as the housing market gets more expensive, I think there's certainly plenty of places where even very, solidly middle class people are struggling to find the kind of housing in the places that they want.
And I feel like this isn't just a Chicago specific problem.
No, this is absolutely something that has happened all over the country in terms of
what are other cities doing as far as solutions?
I think nowhere has found the silver bullet. I think, you can find a variety of solutions. Two directions that cities have gone. One of them is, direct subsidy, right? How can we create more direct support for people who need it to access high-quality housing?
Mm-hmm.
Another direction that some folks have been looking at is, what are the policies and rules that actually encourage higher-cost housing? So, for example, not allowing apartments or having very strict rules on what those can look like. you know, there's lots of people, me, for example, right, who I could never afford to buy a single family home in most of, you know, I've grown up on the north side, couldn't do it most of the north side.
Yeah, you're not alone.
Right. But we could afford a condo, right? But where condos or, you know, new apartment buildings aren't allowed, that's obviously not an option.
You know, Amy, when I think about the situation here, the landscape, I see cranes and new buildings going up all over the city all the time. I don't know about you when you're out and about. Are most of those just luxury apartments? Is that what's happening?
I mean, are you seeing them downtown? Where are you seeing the cranes?
I'm seeing them on the north side. I'm seeing them downtown. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they look like, you know, those little tiny, you know, studio one and two luxury condos.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right based on the data. You know, just to zoom out a little bit, if you look at the number of construction permits issued for residential buildings going back to even, you know, the 90s, you see this huge drop in the number of permits issued starting around 2010 during the Great Recession. And building levels really haven't gotten back to where they were. And the ones that you are seeing getting built are these luxury developments, because that's kind of what developers can afford to do without subsidies. You know, the cost of aluminum and materials are probably going to get higher. And in order to cover their costs, developers have to build to the top of the market.
So they're building these for people who can afford them, right? So people who make more money.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do we need more variety of the kinds of units being built, Daniel? Is that it?
Yeah, I think, you know, a wide variety of units helps serve a wide variety of people and different price points and family configurations. You know, one thing that I think we have seen is a squeezing of the sort of 2 to 6 or 2 to 12 unit sort of small apartment or condo building that has made up the sort of backbone of so many neighborhoods housing stocks in Chicago. Mm. Increasingly, what you do see getting built over the last 20 years or so is either very, very, very high-end single-family homes, you know, talking million-plus dollars, or these very large multifamily buildings, mostly downtown or in, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are tend to be, studios, one-bedrooms. And so if you want sort of like a two-bedroom or a three-bedroom, you know, modest three-bedroom in sort of a modest building, it's hard to find.
Well, that's the same situation that LaTanya is going through, right? She's struggling to find places that are big enough, you know, after she's paid her bills and taken care of her kids. The leftover income that a lot of what is available to her is just too small for what her family would actually need.
It's like, where can you go in the city of Chicago for you have $2,200 left a month and you can't go anywhere. And if you show that to a landlord, they're going to be like, lady, you don't even make three times the rent. You're only left, once they look at my bank statements, you're only left with $2,200. You would really need a studio. And it's like, who is gonna, if I have three kids, it's like, that's still, we can't shack up in a studio.
Yeah, and what makes matters even worse, Amy, you talked with somebody named Antonio Gutierrez from the Autonomous Tenants Union, and he was saying to you that, you know, yes, the city's getting more expensive, but there's another problem here. Of the affordable units that are out there that are still available, a lot of them are just in bad shape and sometimes dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, he said exactly that. And, you know, even recently, there's been news reports of fires in buildings that have become deadly because the property manager or the landlord or owner has been neglectful. And those are commonly in these what are naturally occurring affordable units. And LaTanya, too, like we drove past a couple of apartments that were affordable for her, but, you know, she noted that that's not an area that she feels safe in. Mm. She's had issues with rats and mold and things like that. She lived there in the past. And so it's really a catch-22 for renters. It's like, if you want to not spend over half your income on rent, you have to settle for these types of conditions.
Yeah. So Daniel, how can the city get affordable housing to a better standard?
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate raising the question of conditions. That's something that Impact for Equity is focusing on. We sort of have two things that we're looking at. One of them is we're part of a coalition called the Healthy Homes Coalition that would look to establish a proactive rental inspection program and rental registry, so that right now these you know, inspections are basically done based on complaints, and there's lots of issues with that. And then the other side is, okay, once a building has sort of entered the system, how do we ensure that the courts and the city and you know, the infrastructure that's around to enforce and improve these conditions actually works, and works without displacing the tenants.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many obstacles in the way here. You know, we didn't even touch on Illinois' ban on rental control, you know, which continues to make things worse, right? Where landlords are able to tack on another $200 next year for your rent, and there's really not much you can do about it. So, you know, it brings me back to LaTanya. She ultimately chooses to leave the state, possibly.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, she's giving.
It's that bad. She cannot find anything in Chicago.
No. And, you know, if you look at the data, we've been looking at the data. It's like literally what is there for her to afford here. She's giving herself one more year to really try to find things. She's thinking about getting a second job so she can, you know, increase her budget for rent. But if she can't find anything, she has actually put herself on an affordable housing wait list in Florida, in a couple cities in Florida.
Florida.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's even looking as far as Florida. And, you know, unfortunately, she is still, it's still bleak over there. She's 865th on that wait list right
now. Wow.
Yeah.
Tough situation and tough times, too. So thank you for your great reporting, Amy. Amy Chin is WBEZ's data reporter. Her full story on the rise in rents will be up online at WBEZ.org later today. And Daniel K. Hertz is housing director with Impact for Equity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you conversations to answer questions about the issues that affect our everyday lives. Hit subscribe to stay up to date wherever you listen, or visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for tuning in.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.